What's up?
Good vibes.
It is fall.
It is.
The time of coziness and some good conversations.
Warmth. Both external and internal warmth.
Internal. It's also the season for some good drinks.
Yes. So to aid us in the internal warmth, we have today a white Chardonnay from Tobin James Vineyard in Monterey, California. Monterey County, specifically. It's a medium white wine. Drinking white because I personally am not in huge favor of red dry wines. Acquired taste.
I can go both ways, but you're more of a fan of just white.
Yeah. And so today's episode, we wanted to talk about moderation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, what better way...
What better way to talk about moderation than to practice moderation right
exactly.
in front of you.
So
here we are. We're going to go share a bottle and share some talk. That pop.
Mm-hmm.
Few better sounds in the world than the pop of a wine bottle or just that, the crack of a cold beer on a Sunday or a summer day.
Oh, I know.
Ooh, that's a good sound too.
Yes.
You got the technique with a little hand roll?
You gotta, yes sir. When I serve wine at monastery dinners, I've gotten complimented by multiple people saying, oh, you actually know how to pour wine. It's impressive.
Does it affect the flavor? Or is it just more an aesthetic?
It's just. Well, I think it actually keeps the dribble from dripping like onto the table.
Oh, that makes
like
sense.
So, cheers, my good sir.
Cheers, bro. I don't know if you say cheers for wine, do you?
Yeah, salud. I think so. Salud. I don't know. Gambe, as they say.
Gambe.
What is that? In Taiwan. It means
really?
Another one.
Oh, that's fire. That's fire.
Very nice.
Good stuff. Sensational.
Our candle scent today is molasses cookie.
Yeah. So my voice is a little raw right now. Yeah, molasses cookie. So we're kind of eating while we share the drink.
Yeah. So, moderation.
What are your thoughts?
Yes. What are one's thoughts? Okay. So, well, moderation is supposed to be a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. It's the virtue of temperance in a lot of ways.
One of the four cardinal virtues, essentially.
Yes. Moderation, at least as like Aristotle would say, is like virtue. It's almost like the meta definition of a virtue is the mean or the moderate mean between two extremes.
Those extremes both being vices.
Right. But I guess more specifically, we're speaking about moderation of good things, of enjoyable things,
right.
or pleasure,
mm-hmm.
Because not all pleasure is bad.
Pleasure
God created
by nature
it.
Is good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. God created it. So there are heresies and there are people who believe that to experience pleasure, whether it's bodily or due to food or something, is by nature wrong because the body is evil.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely springs out of a dualistic philosophy where like soul good, body bad,
mm-hmm.
doing things of the body is evil.
Mm-hmm. But it even can bleed over into certain denominations of Christianity.
Yeah,
like, I know that... there are some faith traditions where people treat different kinds of pleasure, whether it's pleasure related to food or
alcohol.
Drink or sexual pleasure or alcohol, especially even like the buzz is like just by nature evil because,
mm-hmm.
it's tying us down to this world and therefore it's preventing us from being in a relationship with God.
You're right.
But in reality, we know that pleasure, just like all other good things, comes from God. All the good things that sometimes can distract us even from higher spiritual things are still... And if they're rightly ordered, they lead us back to God. So power,
mm-hmm.
possessions, pleasure, all the things that people seek in this life naturally and that we're naturally predisposed to seek, those lead us to God and they come from God. It's just we got to be sure that we're rightly ordering them below our service to God and that they don't distract us from
mm-hmm.
what's most important. But
so
I don't think this is going to do that.
So I guess then when just like speaking about moderation, I think it's best to definitely talk about moderation in like specifics,
mm-hmm.
because other virtues, yes, you need to specify, but sometimes maybe you can still be a little bit more abstract. Like moderation is only treated well when you can actually be concrete
like
about
concrete.
It. Like what is actual moderation versus what is excess or what is like scrupulosity?
Yeah,
because certainly with alcohol, Aquinas
there's a range
I think
of feelings.
Talks about. Drinking to the point of hilarity.
Like,
we're just enough where they, you find
things
a
funny.
Little bit funnier than you might otherwise. But
when the moon seems to
in
shine,
order to
like
find a joke
wine,
funny,
says.
At least if the joke is like a little intellectual, you still have to be using your reason. So
yes.
you can't be losing your reason when you're drinking alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
That's in excess. But to find the humor maybe in things a little bit more might take a kick. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should depend on alcohol.
No.
For that. And maybe people could get into a point where they don't find themselves getting drunk, but they do find a dependence on alcohol as
for social purposes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's first talk about that. Like, what is moderation? While we're drinking, since, you know, yeah, that makes most sense, let's just mainly focus on, like, moderation of alcohol and drinking. And let's first, like, look at that scenario of just drinking in order to, like, take the edge off a little bit, mm-hmm, or to be more social. Do you think that that can be done moderately, or do you think that's, like, an immoderate use of alcohol? And if we even need to step back before that, what do you think is moderation in this context?
I don't think drinking to take the edge off or to add maybe even to some level of social comfort is immoderate. I think that's one of the advantages of alcohol. And I think some people might get turned off by that because they're like, oh, that's something often functioning alcoholics will turn to. It's a dependency. They go to an extreme where, like, they can't be in a social setting and they can't be at a party without having a serious buzz. But yeah, I think that's actually one of the benefits of alcohol. Is it's not that we're supposed to... We don't have to just drink beer or wine just because of the flavor. Like, that's valid. If you really like the flavor, that's awesome. But, like, it's not like, oh, if you have any motivation other than just liking the flavor, then that's necessarily intemperate or immoderate. I think you can also be, like, acknowledge the simple fact that, look, when you have, you know, a couple beers with friends,
yeah,
and when you have some wine with friends, whatever it is, you relax a little bit, and that's your body naturally responding to the effects of alcohol, and that's good, and it fosters social dynamics that... sometimes just happen more easily there than they would if you're totally sober. And I don't think there's something wrong with that, but do you disagree?
I don't disagree with that, like, principle, but I do disagree if someone feels that they need to drink alcohol.
Yes.
To be, like, themselves in a social setting.
Well, that seems to reflect some insecurity or some...
Well, then that's what I'm saying is, like, the moderation of the material thing might be fine, but it's almost a moderation of, like, yourself,
that
I almost, in order to me to be, feel good about myself or to me think that people will like me, I almost have to, like, filter it through this, like, third thing.
It brings out the good in me, and
exactly,
without that I can't fully be good,
and I find that as an immoderate approach to alcohol, because it's now you're dependent on it, even if you're not dependent on it to get if you're not using it towards, like, to get hammered or something, you're still overly dependent on it, and you almost can't see yourself without it.
That's fair.
So it's like an immoderate intention, even if, like, your physical use of it is moderate.
It's like a form of vanity.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way. It's a different vice maybe than...
And pride.
Yeah,
like what you're saying. Yeah, like, and it's also... it's strange how, like, self-loathing and pride are actually way closer together than people think. Self-loathing is almost to say, like, I'm almost prideful in, like, how low I see myself in. And if we have such a low opinion of ourselves that we have to use, whether it's, like, always trying to be the funny person in the room, or depending on alcohol to make us, like, social, or to just whatever it is, in order to, like, make people like us, or just to feel normal about ourselves, I think we now have taken what should just be something that we enjoy, and now it's a dependency.
See, I'm glad you brought that up, because you brought up other things like trying to be always the funny one. I think that point drives home the reality that there's nothing special about using alcohol to improve your social comfort. Like, it's something people turn to, but it's definitely not the only thing.
Yeah, right.
Because, yeah, you might be someone who feels unconfident, and you're like, look, I just don't feel good about myself. Unless I'm always making jokes. So every time I go to a party, I'm just going to set myself up as a person who's making jokes and being funny. That way people will like me, or I feel good about myself. Or maybe this person who's like, I don't feel good about myself unless I'm always dressing right and I'm, like, wearing the most stylish clothes. So I'm going to put those on. Then I feel good in social settings and I'll feel like people look at me well. And I think alcohol, people do the same thing, where they're like, I don't feel good about myself or my social... affability or my ability to just have a good conversation with people, unless I'm a little bit buzzed, so I'll turn to alcohol. But the point is that there's nothing, I think, special about that, right? It's not that there's something unique to alcohol there. I mean, it's got a unique ability.
I was gonna say,
it's got a unique ability, but because it actually can affect you psychologically, but it's not special, the desire to kind of cover over your wounds by trying to put on some sort of facade.
Yeah, hiding. Whatever it is that we use to hide. And the one thing that does distinguish alcohol from, like, being the funny guy in the room, or trying to be the guy who, like, just knows everyone, he's like, mm-hmm. you know, the popular one, mm-hmm. is that this can affect your reasoning.
Right.
Those things That's will true. Never actually affect your use of reason. And so this, taken too far, if you're especially, you know, if you're dependent on alcohol every time you're in a party or in a social setting, mm-hmm. your alcohol tolerance is going to go up, which means you're going to start drinking more and more and more to a point where you might actually now just need it to feel normal about mm-hmm. yourself, not right. even to be in right. a social setting. Whereas, like, always being the funny guy, you might come to a point where you literally can't not crack jokes, which, yeah. again, is its own problem. But you haven't affected your use of rationality.
That's true. That's
necessarily.
True. Yeah.
So that's why, while yes, I agree, it is an escape.
There is something still special.
There's something special. Yeah, there uniquely.
Is. That's fair. I take back what I said.
Important. No, I wouldn't take it back what you said.
Well, I think I said at one point there's nothing special about it. Alcohol, but there is still something special about
yeah.
alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah. But people do similar things with other things that aren't as easily considered immoral, like, for example, nicotine. A lot of people use Zyn
yeah.
or cigarettes to kind of take the edge off, and it relaxes them in social settings. And while that's often frowned upon, especially medically, mm-hmm. the church has never come forward and said, like, oh, that's right. necessarily immoral. So that's one form of escapism in a way, or a way to relax yourself socially that does can affect you a little bit psychologically. It doesn't deplete the use of your reason the way alcohol can.
Right.
But it's still something artificial, and yet that we don't as quickly judge to be immoral. So it's interesting.
Would you say that
even though it can be harmful for your body?
Yeah. What would you say then is someone who maybe you encountered a friend and you feel like they have maybe an overdependency on it to be in a social setting or mm-hmm. to feel normal? How do you teach moderation to someone who thinks they're actually still being moderate? Or how do we learn?
Oh, when they're like, I'm fine, I don't have
yeah,
a problem.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that question, which you can answer that first, or you can answer this one, is moderation a natural, like, tendency for us? Like, and so we're born with a conscience, mm-hmm. and as long as we inform it or guide it and we don't suppress it to a point of oblivion, mm-hmm. it guides us. Even if we don't have religion, mm-hmm. conscience still, the catechism teaches, is that inner voice of God, that regardless of one's faith, it's still there.
Yeah.
It's just in faith, it grows and we're more attuned to it better. Mm-hmm. Do you think that moderation is a natural instinct? Do we know that, okay, things are good to an extent and then they become bad? People talk about, oh, you know, there can be too much of a good thing. That seems to be a principle people accept yes. regardless of maybe their background. Mm-hmm. So is moderation a nature or nurture kind of thing? Mm. Do you have to be taught this is the right amount of this and this is wrong? Because people, you know, when I turned 21 and started, like, learning how to drink with friends, that they were like, oh, you have to learn your alcohol limit. Mm-hmm. Do you think you should have to learn it yourself, or do you think people should be able to tell you, like, hey, look, where you are now, like, 3 drinks, and just cut it off? Mm-hmm. Should someone teach you how to do it, or should you learn it?
The learning, I think, your limit is a valid thing because everyone has different body weights, everyone has different, like, body compositions, and so mm-hmm. you genuinely might just go into an experience of having some drinks and not know how much is going to affect you. And so there's some practical level of just, like, figure out what's right for your body type and for your height and weight, all those kind of things that
right.
are different factors that affect how easily you are affected by alcohol. But as far as whether moderation is something taught by nature or nurture, obviously these kind of things are a little complicated because we have sort of two natures. We have the nature of being made in the image and likeness of God mm-hmm. that we were given from creation. And then we have the sort of second nature imposed on us after original sin, which imposes this concupiscence on us. So I think in accord with our true nature being made in the image and likeness of God, we are naturally disposed to seek the good. And mm-hmm. one element of the good is pleasure. And so it's, I think, perfectly natural for us to seek good things, but in a moderated way that I think kind of accords with just what seems... Honestly, the optimal experience of pleasure is kind of a moderate one. Mm. For example, with food, like, if you don't eat food at all, you're going to feel really hungry. That's painful.
Yeah.
If you eat too much food, you're going to feel bloated and awful, and you're going to have a horrible time in the bathroom, especially if it's like Taco Bell.
Yeah.
But if you eat like a moderate amount, something in between, maybe Chick-fil-A.
Let's go.
Not sponsored by Chick-fil-A. But if you eat like a moderate amount, you get that pleasure of eating, but you don't feel bad afterwards. And so that's actually kind of an ideal level of pleasure. And so in a way, I think in our pursuit of pleasure, when it's rightly ordered in accord with our first nature that we were given by God, where we are rightly ordered towards pleasure, but kind of seeking it to the best degree possible, we would tend towards moderation. But the problem is then you throw in original sin into the mix, you throw in concupiscence, and that just tends us always towards extremes. It always tends us towards addictions. It tends us towards, people talk about addictive personalities, but often I think what they're talking about is just the fall and original sin, which drives us towards...
There's both, I would say.
There is such a thing, for
yes,
sure.
There is.
And it can manifest itself more extreme with some people than others, but I think all of us have a tendency to, when we find a good thing, like, oh, go to the extreme.
I just want all of it.
I just want all of it, exactly. Yeah. Like when you're a little kid, no little kid, like at, I don't know, some sort of youth group event where there's Oreos on the table is like, yeah, you know what? I just want to get one Oreo. Like,
yeah,
no,
right.
they want the entire box so they could have it. That's their parents true. Are just like, yeah. no, Timmy, that's enough. So I think because of the fall, I think there has to be learning. But the cool thing is we got to get to learn from these negative experiences when we do go too far.
Mm. So one
like Adam and Eve before the fall, I'm sure they plucked grapes off of the vines in the Garden of Eden, and if they made wine out of it, I don't know. I'm sure they drank it moderately and they had a dang good time. But then after the fall, they're like, shoot, we need more. So.
Hmm. Speaking of that, you've read Paralandra by C.S. Lewis, the second book in his space trilogy. When Ransom is in Paralandra, there's these like fruit trees that you don't necessarily eat, but like when you touch them, they like wash you in, like they're like this water fruit almost. It's kind of how you drink and eat at the same time. But it satisfies you so perfectly. And he says, well, everything in him wanted more. He knew he didn't need more.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, he actually didn't want more because then it would be having too much.
Like,
it was unnecessary. And Paralandra is supposed to be kind of a sinless place.
Yes.
So that he, even while he's there, he starts to understand that there is just enough good for me to experience as God gives it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I try to reach out for the fruit that I could have, but I shouldn't have, that's to take it rather if it's been given to me. And I think that should be like, just like the difference in moderation is accepting what is given as it's given and not trying to grasp for what more. Cause that's, think about like that, the fruit of the garden. God gave them all of the other fruits in the garden, but they took the one that they wanted.
Exactly.
So the in moderation of that is that we see all of these things, but I want more good because Satan tempted them to think that it was better for them in where they were to have that fruit than not. One thing, though, to distinguish or maybe to push back against your analogy of like like food moderation is that we also would die if we don't eat food. We will not die if we drink
alcohol.
That's
true.
That's a principle.
It's not something we need, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Father Afanuga would say that in our ethics class, whether it's about alcohol or sex. It's like no one ever died by not having enough alcohol or not having enough sex. But people have died from not having enough food. So if you think like, oh my gosh, I have to have these things, you don't actually.
Sorry, I just thought, I just imagine like a guy like on his deathbed and the doctor's like, you have 3 days to live unless you have sex. He's like, no.
That'd be horrifying. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So God has given us, like by his design, a pleasure associated with eating food as kind of a way for us to...
A motivation to ensure that we fill the need.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he gave us things like alcohol that we don't need by our nature to survive, but has been like an added gift.
Yes.
So in that sense, I feel like that's why moderation in those added things that are unnecessary as far as like needs go, but God still desires us to have like a fulfilled or like even enjoyable life that he still gave these things to us, that those are things we need to treat with extra propriety, extra moderation. And that then to overuse them is to not overuse like nature, but it's overuse a gratuitous extra gift from God. And it's almost like snubbing him back in the face, like, you gave this to me with, and you didn't even need it to give it to me by my nature, but I'm going to take more of that almost than I even deserve.
Right.
I don't know if...
No, I think that makes sense, but I think it is worthwhile to say, just because some pleasure isn't tied, or some activity isn't vitally necessary for our survival, doesn't mean that it's less worthwhile. Sometimes actually those are the things that we can legitimately hold up in higher places of reverence. For example, I was thinking about art. Art and music, we technically don't need those to survive.
Like, right.
Cavemen didn't die just because their cave drawings were pretty mid. Like
because
like, shoot, if only we had a Van Gogh out here, we would be alive. But no, like they didn't technically need those to survive. And yet we value art. We know that there is something so wonderful about art that we hold them in such great, we hold it in esteem, we hold it in reverence. And so I think something similar with some of the pleasures like alcohol, or even pleasures related to sex, is they're technically not necessary for our, at least individual survival. Now, sex is obviously necessary for the survival of the species.
Exactly.
But these are things that are like these added gifts that God has given us that aren't strictly necessary for each one of us. And yet, there's, because we recognize that they're these kind of gratuitous gifts, it's legitimate for us to hold them in places of reverence. And therefore, that's why we have to treat them in a certain ordinate way, like with moderation. But then also, just one quick thing I wanted to say as a note. I hope that like related to kind of the question you
asked.
One thing I was thinking is, it seems like one way you can avoid excess in seeking pleasure or just avoid inordinate use of pleasures is simply to recognize the purpose of that pleasure. And basically what's really good is to recognize it in the order of things ascending towards God. And so with alcohol, if you recognize like the purpose of it is to give us some sensible pleasure through taste and even through kind of the point of hilarity, like that little buzz or that social comfort that comes, taking the edge off, exactly, adding to community, then you will use it for that sake. You will enjoy the flavor and then you will use it insofar as it can add to your community. But you won't go so far as to get drunk because that actually detracts from community.
That's a really good point.
It hurts your experience. And same thing with like sex. Ultimately, the purpose of sex is the propagation of children.
Yes.
And so, although, you know, like it's funny, I feel like I heard a talk once where a priest was saying like if many men could have what they wanted or have sex as often as they wanted, they would propagate a village, right? In like a short amount of time. But like if you recognize, no, that's not the point. The point is to propagate children in an ordered way.
Yes.
Then you're not going to use your sexual faculties in an inordinate way. You're going to use it insofar as it helps lead you to fulfill that purpose. And so I think recognizing the purpose of all these pleasures, or the purpose of the activities that bring these pleasures, is the way to kind of experience them in an ordered way that doesn't go so far into excess that you wind up either in lust or in immoderate use of alcohol or all those kind of things.
Okay, I actually really want to like focus on this reality a bit, because this is really, really cool. The idea of moderation in the context of community, that like that is such a good principle to ride on in like regards to, is this too much, or do I not need to do this, or do I need to do this, is asking how it also continues to affect the broad community. Because if you think about whether it's drinking or sex or eating or being like a gym rat, whatever it is how is it affecting your community? So if you're going to the gym so much that you like are snubbing your friends, or you're not making priority for prayer, you're both affecting the physical community and the spiritual community. If you're drinking to a point where you're engaging with friends, but then you go too far, now you have lost your reason, which is an effect on like how you're relating to other people, because there's a chance now you could start insulting them, or you're saying things that you shouldn't. Or now that you're forcing them to have to take care of you, when you should be able to take care of yourself. Overeating, you're now depriving potentially other people of the food that they by right should have.
Mom comes home, checks the cabinet. Dude, why is it empty again?
It looks so irresponsible and so selfish. And other people are like, wow.
Well, it is selfish. And that's why it's harming your community.
Exactly. Yeah. So like the context, a really good thing I heard one time was, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's community. And if we're surrounded by a community that supports us, it's that which motivates us, not, oh, I just want to be dry. Like that probably will not often
motivate us. That won't motivate you.
It's other people.
Right.
So how can we frame better that context of community in our heads at all times, rather than just, oh, it's a principle I think about, but when I actually get into the moment, I kind of say, screw it. How do you, can you think of like maybe philosophical basis for moderation that also blends well with an idea of like the community from a Christian perspective? Because if you think about, I mean, God created man in a community to begin with. Like community existed before sin existed, because God created Adam and Eve. So community is obviously like the best, most intended place for us to be in that moderation place, right? They were in moderation in the garden, in community.
Well, we're called by grace to share in the life of the Trinity, and that's obviously the most perfect community, right? So we're always desiring that.
We're claimed as a people of God, a chosen race, you know, and that means that...
A church.
Yeah.
We're never called as individuals.
Exactly. So almost moderation seems like an avenue to understand like the higher calling of the spiritual mm-hmm. life, that it has to be in a context of community and not an individual grasping or seizing of all of these things mm-hmm. for myself. So I don't know if whether from Aristotle or Thomas Aquinas talking about moderation or temperance, but if you could like pull that in with an ecclesiastical understanding of Christian community.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's like asking you to put a lot of stuff on the spot, but what do you think about that?
I think it's really good that you brought up that moderation seems like a requisite for community.
Mm-hmm.
Like if everybody in a community is trying to do things immoderately, the community is just going to fall
apart. It falls
apart.
It's like a mob.
It's like a mob, exactly. Not even, because they're all going to go in different directions. They're all going to start like killing each other.
It's Babel.
It's exactly. That's what it is, right? And I was just going to say, this isn't from necessarily Aristotle or Aquinas or some deep theology, but just experientially. And from the way you see people who have addictions, like the way their life unfolds, it seems like addictions and extreme pursuits of or immoderate pursuits of pleasure always come from desiring community. Like not only is community the opposite of addiction, but actually addiction forms in the first place out of a desire for community. Huh. So, for example, with alcoholism. Often the person, this is at least one of the main ways that people often form alcoholism, is they desire that feeling of being part of a group, and they desire being loved in a social setting, and they think that alcohol helps them do that better.
Or the group they find themselves associated with.
Or the group that they find, exactly. They're like, oh, well, I feel a home here, I feel welcome among these people, and they happen to drink, well, then I'll drink so that I can participate with them. And so they wind up going down this rabbit hole where they're drinking more and more, and then before long, the very thing that they saw, which was to be community, is now the last thing they can possibly have, because now they're drinking by themselves and they're totally isolated.
And
to
add to that point, someone who maybe has suffered a lot of trauma and they use alcohol as the suppression, what they really want is someone to support them in their trauma.
Exactly.
Someone who says, like, I see you here, I want to help you. But because they don't have that support, I might as well escape from it. Mm-hmm. And so while their desire for the good that they want is a community, since they can't find it, the next thing they do is to I'll fill that hole with something that blocks my desire.
Exactly. Or it seems, if not willfully trying to block the desire, seems like the next best thing in trying to pursue that desire.
Yeah,
right?
It's the escape. If I can't have that, I might as well have this.
Exactly. And I think that's the case. We talked about alcohol addiction. But I think it's often the case with people who struggle with sex addiction, is that it starts out it's basically the devil. What he's doing is he's tempting them with a legitimate desire for communion. And then in the process, he's so conniving that he gets them to go down a series of activities that lead them so far away from fulfilling
community.
That desire and having that community. And so with, for example, sex addiction, it's often with many people, they desire intimate romantic union, or they desire that union with another person. And so they start turning to things like porn or just like hookups.
Yeah.
And then before long, they're absolutely isolated in this addiction, and they feel cut off from everybody, and they feel totally outside the realm of having an intimate relationship.
And then they go back to it more and more because it's at least the closest thing I could possibly get to what I desire.
Mm-hmm.
So John Paul II actually made it's a quote from him about pornography, and he says that it's not that it shows too much. In fact, it just shows too little.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't show what should be there, which is like a fostering of union, communion, right? Because when it's a sacrament, it is community building, because it builds union between the husband and wife, and it creates another member into the community of their love versus just a use of each other. Because he also says the opposite of love is not hate, it's use.
Exactly.
And that immoderation, so moderation is to I feel like truly understand things with a loving understanding of what they are or how to
appreciate
love them as they are supposed
way.
To be loved.
Yeah.
Versus a use of them, fulfill something.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense. And especially particularly when it comes to intimacy, that when we don't have the intimacy of friendship or the intimacy of communion with other people, our bodies just naturally needs to experience intimacy.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to if I don't have good friends, or I don't have a wife or a husband, or that relationship is not what it's supposed to be, the next outlet is something.
Right.
And something I was reading recently too about just addiction is that, so if you have like a history in your family of alcoholism, you might yourself avoid alcohol because you're like, well, I don't know if I can moderately treat it.
Exactly.
Something this I was reading recently is we need to like move away from that model that, okay, if you have a family history of alcoholism, you probably have a family history of it like in yourself too. It's that it's not just alcoholism. You have a family history of addictive behavior. So you are going to be prone to immoderately something.
Right.
It might not be alcohol. We have a, like a history of it in our family, but no one in our immediate family has any problem with it. Right. And I think it's because like, oh yeah, we understand this for what it is, but by nature now we have inherited an addictive personality or in, like addictive brains. So that, okay, it might not be alcohol, but it's going to be something else.
Right.
So this guy was basically saying that.
It could be the gym. It could be who knows what.
Yeah, this guy was saying that. So people like hyper-focus on like, okay, like moderate my use of alcohol. I don't have it at all. That they're all these other things now.
They let other things slide.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
And that's why moderation has to be treated by communion and not just sobriety from a one particular thing.
Yeah.
Because communion heals all of these areas. Whereas sobriety might say, okay, well, you're sober from alcohol. But are you still, like, you could be sober from alcohol and still have no support of friends.
And that, you could be sober but not integrated in a community in any way.
Yeah. And how lonely that feels.
Exactly.
And you probably look back at yourself at the things that you've gone through and maybe don't, and still, like, regret all of that. Versus if you're a community, they could support you and, like, yeah, okay, that was hard and that was rough, but you're here now, and look what God led you through, even in all of that. But if you don't have a community point that out to you, you might just always think like, well, I'm better now, but I was garbage back then.
Yeah.
And then never like forgive or love yourself.
Exactly. And I think that's really good that you brought that up, because that can be a kind of a guiding principle for making decisions moment by moment. It was good you said early on, it's really useful to talk about concrete things when you're dealing with moderation.
Yeah.
And I think it's really the case in that if you place community and being integrated in the community, having good friendships, having well-developed relationships as your goal, then that can guide you in all your decisions, because you realize that that can help you to avoid immoderation and to always do things moderately. Because, for example, moment by moment, you can look at your actions and say, is this really leading me to what I truly want, namely being integrated in the community, or is this leading me towards isolation or just addiction? For example, if you're drinking, you know, a beer with some friends, you can say, yeah, this is helping foster my relationship with them. This is helping me just chill out for a little while and have some good conversations. But if you're by yourself and you're just like pounding a bottle of vodka in your house alone, is that really helping you foster community? No, not at all. So you can put that bottle away and say, we're not going to do that. Or similarly with any other numbers of addictive behavior, eating, sex, any of those kind of things. You can look at the action, the particular action, say, is this in any way helping me foster a friendship, foster my relationship with other people or with God or with my family? And if the answer is yes, then that's good. Go ahead and enjoy that pleasure. If the answer is no, then that's something you need to cut out of your life.
How do you speak to someone about that, though, who themselves, like, so kind of circling back to that question, who doesn't personally think that they have a problem? How can you motivate them to see the need to moderate their behavior? And
you mean if it already is immoderate?
Yeah, or even if it's not, that they just don't see anything wrong with it. It's like, oh, every now and then I like go crazy. And like, you know, it's pretty infrequent, so it's not like an actual problem. It just it just happens every now and then. Especially if maybe, you know, any of our listeners have friends or particularly family who have kind of like lost any of like the morality of faith. So they could, maybe they're lapsed Catholics, lapsed Christians.
So they're not thinking like a sin context.
Exactly.
They're just thinking about what feels good.
Yeah. How do you convince? And I think community is a really good place, because we're not really talking about like sin there. It's talking about how you affect other people, which still tends to be a principle that this world cares about, is how be kind, right? You know, don't judge.
Or at the very least, how are you viewed by other people?
Right.
Reputation is a very valuable thing.
But yeah, so. I don't know. I have a couple thoughts, but I want to hear.
Share them. I want to hear yours first.
No, I want to hear yours first.
I want to hear yours first if you have some, because I want to kind of think about my
own. That's fair. I guess what I was thinking about, like, and how do you convince like someone for moderation is, instead, even if, so if the community, I guess, argument doesn't work, or and they're like the moral basis, whatever, is ask them, like, really, how do they feel about themselves? Like, truly, how do they feel about themselves?
Right.
Do they really wake up after nights of partying or nights of hooking up or whatever it is, and truly say to themselves, like, I am living the best
life. I'm living my best life.
Dude. I'm living, like, to the fullest extent. And even if, like,
got a raging
they're
headache
told
right now. Yeah.
That, like, this is freedom to do whatever you want. Like, I really go down, like, do you really feel free? Like, what is freedom to you, and do you feel free? Because freedom, and John Paul II, I love John Paul II, man. I can quote him all day.
Me too.
But he says, you know, freedom is not the ability to do what we want. It's the ability to do what we ought, what is right. And to kind of ask him, like, okay, are you really doing what you ought to be doing? Are you really doing what you want to be doing? And some of them might say, like, yeah, I want to be doing this. Like, but do you actually? If you can really start to dig into the heart of the person, there has got to be, I can't imagine there's not, there's got to be a place where they still do not like themselves. There's got to be a disdain for what they're doing and what outlets they're choosing to remedy that. And getting not to
they
condemn
might not admit
them
that
in that place.
To you.
Exactly.
But
that's
they
the
might admit
part.
That to themselves. You have to open the questions that they're willing to think about themselves. Maybe encourage them journaling a little bit.
Yeah. But not to condemn them in that place, but to say, like, okay, what you want there, that's the good thing.
Yeah.
That's what you want. Do you really think that all of these things you're doing, this immoderate behavior, this excess, is actually getting you to the point that you want? And especially from the perspective of the parable of the prodigal son, is that he went and said, spent his life on a life of dissipation. So, and his brother comments that he swallowed his father's property with prostitutes. So he was living richly. He
Major
was probably,
L.
You know, going crazy. You know,
one
living
out of ten,
up
would
with,
not recommend.
And what does he say? Like, at the end, when he says he comes to himself. So he finally looks at himself as he actually sees himself. And what does he say? I no longer deserve to be called your son. That's what he wants to go to his father. And I kind of wonder if he actually thought that about himself before he left his father's estate. Like, before he went and lived his life of dissipation, if he was convinced that I don't deserve to be called your son. Like, I am not worthy. I should not be in this place. Where there's like evil things I desire, or I'm all over the place. And because of that, I don't like myself. And because I don't like myself, I can't see how the Father would like me. So I'm going to use all of these things that the world tells me could get me at least to feel okay. Or that should make me feel good about myself.
Right.
And so finally, when he comes to himself, he realizes, I never wanted or never thought I could be the Father's son. And now he's actually come to himself, but he realizes still, even if he doesn't feel like he could be the Father's son, he knows that the Father is still best for him. Even if he doesn't be called the son anymore, he still knows that being with his Father is the best thing for him. And that's when he comes to himself.
So you're saying it's not that he suddenly realized, oh, maybe I'm not worthy to be the son of my father. But it's actually, that's what he'd been thinking all along. It's just
this is a postulation.
Just the moment of conversion is when he realized what he thought about himself all along.
All along. And
I mean, it's
now
a parable,
he returns
so
to the Father.
But that is the case with many people.
Yeah.
That is how it unfolds for many of us, is that it's like the process of conversion is not so much a matter of like coming to some new radical realization that was never in our minds, but really actually finally
it's
coming
to
know
to
ourselves.
Conscious what has always been subconscious.
Always been us. Exactly. Yeah.
And that's what I would invite people to, is like, if community doesn't matter, or morality doesn't matter, or sin doesn't matter to you, do you matter to yourself? How do you believe you are? Who do you think you are in the eyes of others? Who are you in the eyes of yourself? And no matter how flamboyant, how like excessive, how immoderate people are, like, if you're able to get to a point with them that they actually can be honest about that question, I feel like that's a really good place to open the door.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was really good, because that's just reminding me of, I was just coming back from California yesterday on a plane, and I watched Inside Out 2 on the plane, and it's really interesting. I don't know if anyone
great movie
has seen Inside Out.
100%. I love that movie.
It's good. It's the first good Disney movie in a while.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it's really cool. They have this, obviously, it's, you know, it's a kid Pixar movie, but it's honestly, there's some depth to it.
Dude, yeah.
And
I shed a tear 100% when I watched it.
Did you? Did you? Yeah, no, it hit hard, honestly, especially on a plane. It was, like, kind of weird.
Yeah.
But they show how these core memories, these core moments in a person's life add up to form their sense of self, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Their awareness of who they are and their beliefs about themselves. And it's crazy how your sense of self can be so, can so radically affect your decision making. So if yeah. your beliefs about yourself are that you are a good person and that you are loved and that you are lovable, then that's going to manifest itself in good actions, in moderate actions, to bring back to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to feel this need to grasp.
Ooh, and yet, ooh, yes.
If you, yes. if your sense of self is formed by all these beliefs that you are not enough, or that, yeah, you don't deserve to be the son of your father, your father in heaven, or that you are insufficient and inadequate, then you're going to need to grasp at all these things. You're going to need to grasp at pleasures, either just to numb the pain of feeling yep. inadequate, or to try to feel create adequate.
It. Yeah.
And then that's what's going to turn you into these patterns of behavior that spiral you downwards, so you feel even worse and worse about yourself, and so you just keep repeating, and it becomes a cycle. And that's what we mean by addiction, right? And so, although the parable of the prodigal son is, of course, a parable,
yes.
it's just a story about some characters. It's kind of hard to psychoanalyze characters.
But because it's scripture, so much depth.
There's depth to it.
And Jesus told this story.
Yeah, God literally made up a story. But also, that is a particular story that really is the narration of many of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It plays it out in very vivid illustrations, but it's kind of the biography of many people, many of us sinners. And so there is that reality that we turn to immoderate enjoyment of pleasures. We turn to all kinds of things to just fill this void that really starts not so much with a desire for pleasure or for immoderation, but rather it starts with a self-loathing or in a lack of belief in our own lovability or the fact that we are loved by God. And so it seems like, again, if the opposite of addiction is not sobriety but communion, then the way that we can ensure that we're going to live a good, healthy life where we're not always turning to excess is simply to recognize the ways in which we can achieve that communion and the ways in which we are already welcomed into that communion.
Mm.
It's not that we always have to be putting in work and we're always, it's all on me to try to strive for that communion or to make that relationship happen. No, the relationship is already being offered to us. Christ has offered an invitation to us for communion with him. Obviously, in the Eucharist is the most poignant example, but through our parish communities, through our friendships that may come into our lives. And sometimes we have moments where those are more or less readily available. But there are these gifts where Christ is trying to reach out to us and say, look, I'm putting opportunities in your life where you can have communion, you can be integrated into a community. We need to recognize those and recognize that we are loved and that we are worthy of those relationships and those communities, and then enter into that. Otherwise, we are going to have to turn to immoderation and turn to pleasure just to kind of fill the void.
Yeah.
That was sort of, I went down so many different rabbit holes in that conversation.
Okay. But, do you remember what this means?
Yes.
The symbol?
That means you want to talk.
Yes, it means I have something. So I cross my fingers. I think I mentioned this before. I cross my fingers when
it's sign language.
Something to say, but I also cross it so I don't forget what I want to say.
Okay.
Okay, so what you said, so many good things in it. I particularly love the fact that you said like Christ offers these things for us, like they're already there, and sometimes we feel like, oh, we have to work towards to get it. So the parable of the prodigal son is only half of the parable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually, I've seen in like newer like printed Bibles that it actually listed as the parable of the prodigal and other son, because it's about both sons. And we really often kind of hyper focus on the prodigal son, but we really also need to draw attention to this other guy. So okay, think about him for a second. I think he also did not really believe, I am the father's son. Because what does he tell his father? I worked tirelessly for you every day.
Mm-hmm.
Almost as if, in order for me to be called your son, I had to work.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do everything in order to prove to you that I could still be your son.
Yeah, he's not begrudging because he worked hard. He's begrudging because he thought the requisite for being a good son was working so hard.
And then what did he say? But in all that time, I didn't even ask, you didn't even give me a goat to feast on with my friends. Mm-hmm. Did he ask? Did he ever ask for the good things from the father? Mm-hmm. Did he ever ask? No, instead of his brother who lived in moderation to excess, he lived nothing. Mm-hmm. So all he lived was this drive, I have to do this. Who I am is not worthy, so I have to work. Mm-hmm. I could not settle. And instead of asking for good things from the Father, because the Father desires to give them to us,
asking you.
Instead of asking from God, he then was so deprived.
Mm-hmm.
And so he lived in immoderation of lacking. He had mm-hmm. nothing good to experience in his life.
Yeah.
So that's why he was so ticked off at his brother and so ticked off at his father.
Mm-hmm.
And that his anger was born because he also lacked the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so that moderation is to accept the gifts that God gives us as he gives them to us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the younger son did not accept them as his father gave, so he took all of them.
Mm-hmm.
The older son didn't accept his father gave for them.
So he tried to get rid of all of them.
So he tried to pretend like he didn't need them.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's mad when his father still celebrates.
Yeah.
So it's like, but what does his dad say to him? Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
Everything I have
is yours.
Is yours.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, that is what God says to
mm-hmm,
us.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I have is yours.
Mm-hmm.
But we rejoice because your brother was dead because he had no community,
mm-hmm.
but is now alive because he has returned.
He's reintegrated into the community.
He is back in with the love of you and of me mm-hmm. and this whole place
mm-hmm.
because he has actually accepted his sonship. So,
well, that's what's interesting. The older best way to live
moderation, sorry, you can get right real
yeah,
quick.
Sorry.
Like, to live moderation is, you have to first just live in the identity of your adopted son or daughtership.
Mm-hmm.
Like, moderation, I think, flows out of an acceptance of one's identity.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no identity, then mm-hmm. immoderation is rampant
mm-hmm.
because you have to create your identity mm-hmm. by drinking, by sex, by becoming the most swole person, by becoming the smartest person. You have to create an identity. And the only way to create an identity that everyone recognizes is to do that thing only,
mm-hmm.
to be only doing that thing, mm-hmm. rather than living in the identity that you actually already have
mm-hmm.
and then just accepting the gifts that he gives us because everything he has is
mm-hmm.
ours.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that because it's funny. We often think that the error of the prodigal son and the error of the older son are so vastly different. But like you're saying, they actually started from the exact same point.
Yeah.
They both failed to recognize that they were beloved sons of their father. And because of that, you said one turned to excess, one turned to what Aristotle would call deficiency. Because we brought this up at the very beginning. Moderation is a virtue. Virtue is a mean between extremes. One is excess, the other is deficiency. When you don't have enough, when you have too much and when you don't have enough. And so the error there is that the virtue there would be recognize, I'm a beloved son of my heavenly father. But then the excess, on one hand, is to say, oh, well, like, I'm not a beloved son, and so I have this wound of feeling inadequate, feeling like I'm not worthy, and so I'm going to fill it by an excess of pleasure. The mm-hmm. other extreme is to say, I'm not worthy, so I need to make up for that by just absolutely negating any desire for pleasure mm-hmm. and absolutely living basically just a prudish life where you don't enjoy anything.
Yeah.
But both, again, start from the same fundamental error. And that's why you see, in reality, they're both separated from the house, right? The household in the story of the prodigal son is kind of the
church.
Visual aid of the church. It's the visual aid of community. It is like the paradigm community
and they
itself.
Both stay outside.
They're both outside. The one is outside off with harlots and whatnot. But the older son is outside in the field. But both of them are outside of the house. And finally, it's when they're welcome to the house
so good.
that they realize, okay, community is where I find my true identity, like you're saying. And what was I going to say? What was the last thing you said?
I said that the father, all good things come from the father. Like,
exactly.
If yeah.
So that is the way to achieve moderation, is to realize
All is gift.
All is a gift. And everything good is from the father. And so if it's ordered towards community and towards fostering friendships, not only with one another, but with God himself, then that's how you're going to enjoy the good things of this life in a moderate way.
Yeah, because think about it, like if you give someone a Christmas present, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not the only one giving them a Christmas present. So you give them a Christmas present. If they like, oh, wow, this is great, but then shove it aside, that hurts. That's
mm-hmm.
rough. But if they're like, oh, this is great, and then they ignore everything else they'd be given, they've also slighted everyone else.
Mm.
And I think like that's exactly how God's gifts are. He's like, I give you all of these things.
Yeah.
And it says in scripture that the gifts of God are irrevocable, which means he doesn't take them back.
Mm-hmm.
When he gives them to us, he does not take them back.
Yeah.
So, but if we only like say like, God, I only want this one thing and I want it more than I need.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost just like, not that he's like mad, like how dare you use that immoderately, but mm-hmm. rather you're depriving yourself of everything.
Yeah. I love that because you mentioned the quote from John Paul II where he said, pornography is not bad because it reveals too much, but actually shows too little.
Yeah.
Similar with any other addictive behavior. Alcohol, drinking excessively and getting drunk all the time, is not wrong because it's drinking too much. It's actually because it's enjoying pleasure too little. Because the real a real Christian life that embraces all the good things of God is good because it acknowledges the wide, vast array of good things that we can have in this life. There is, you know, the moderated pleasures of food and drink, moderated pleasures of sex. I mean, you don't get that. There's the
as he always reminds me.
There's the moderated pleasures of the intellect, right? The wisdom that we have through learning.
Yeah.
There's the moderated pleasures of, I mean, there's actual pleasure in just being a good person, like practicing the virtues, exactly. Doing charity, those good things. These are all, it's legitimate that we feel pleasure from these things. And so a well-integrated Christian life should embrace all of those things, unless there's reasons, obviously, for letting go of some of them, like,
right,
you know, the for example, if you're a monk or a friar, like you're willingly parting with some of those for the sake of other
higher
good things, higher things. But the point is, God wants to give us a life that is just bountifully abundant, just like overflowing with so many different kinds of goods. And it's wrong for us to fix it on one, not because it's too much of that, it's because it's too little of everything else.
Yeah,
and
at the same time, also, I think moderation also gives us a healthy understanding and acceptance of suffering, of when hard times come.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're only immoderate over excess of things, we're running towards them for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when suffering comes, oh no, that's like the greatest evil.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's loneliness, some kind of pain we experience, loss, grief, everything, we can't accept it.
We can't handle it.
So we run to those things. But when we treat everything as moderation and everything as gift from God, it might be really, really hard, but we can actually accept even suffering as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though it's not a gift that gives us pleasure necessarily, it's a gift that we know that at some way we truly believe what Paul says in Romans 8:28, which is God works out all things for the good for those who love him.
Mm-hmm.
Immoderation is to say, I got to work out the things for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Moderation is to say God truly works out all things for the good. So he gives me good things, and maybe he deprives me of them at times.
Mm-hmm.
He gives me suffering at times. He gives me joy at times.
Mm-hmm.
Moderation, I think, as a Christian virtue, is to actually accept the life that God gives you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's actually to accept the life that God gives you.
Exactly, because in a way, immoderation comes from a lack of trust in God's providence.
Yeah.
Because you're saying, look, I don't trust that God often. These addictions form because people just want to put a Band-Aid or a painkiller on whatever suffering they're currently going through.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the reality is then it worsens their suffering in the long run. But the point is, it comes from this desire to kind of just numb themselves to some present pain. And yet, if we embrace trust in God and we say, look, whatever pain I'm going through, whatever amount of suffering I'm going through, whether it's great or small, I know in the end that God's going to bring it to good, and he's going to bring it for the sake of my sanctification so that I can be a great saint one day, then you don't need to turn to excesses to kind of cover over those wounds, because you recognize that even those wounds can become places of grace.
Yeah.
But if you're like always trying to fill those wounds with, you're just trying to pack them with painkillers through alcohol or sex addiction or whatever, then you're never actually going to be able to attain the grace that God intends those wounds to be instruments of.
Yeah.
And so then you miss out on potentially greater levels of joy and goodness in the long run because you were just trying to avoid the present pain.
And Christ in glory still has his wounds. So the wounds are the very means by which we experience joy. Mm-hmm. By his wounds we are healed. Mm-hmm. And in his glorified state, Christ still had the wounds, right? He still identified.
St. Thomas means, could put his fingers through the wounds.
Which means that woundedness and suffering are an actual path to joy. And that fulfillment that we seek, probably often in immoderation. So moderation is also to accept woundedness.
It is. I mean, think about Christ on the cross when they offered him the sponge, and it had what was kind of, you know, an early form of painkiller on it.
Yeah.
As soon as he tasted it, he refused to drink any more of it because he didn't want to deprive himself of any of the pain, because he knew the greater the pain that he endured on the cross, the more glory there was going to be after his resurrection, the more salvation there was going to be for all of us. And so similarly for us, bring it back to suffering. We've talked about suffering a lot of times on this show recently. The more you embrace some of the tough aspects of life, where you might be tempted to turn to some sort of painkiller, I mean, metaphorical painkiller, the more you embrace those moments of suffering and say, I'm not going to try to turn to some pleasure to just numb myself from this pain, the more in the end that pain is going to become an opportunity for grace.
Mm-hmm.
And if the pain is feeling inadequate and feeling like you're not loved by God fully and feeling like either you're a prodigal son or you're the son, the older son who just remains out working in the fields, if that's the pain and the suffering, then that's something you need to work through, through confession and through healing and throwing yourself at the feet of the Heavenly Father and letting him love you in that moment instead of being like, well, you know what? I just feel inadequate. I feel like unlovable. So I'm just going to turn to some addiction.
And it says in Scripture that the sufferings of this present life are as nothing compared to the glories to be revealed to us.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes we try to run from the sufferings of this present life to have the glories now.
Of this life.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
But it's like, no. Moderation is to say that God gives us joys and graces and gifts now,
mm-hmm.
but those also are nothing compared to the joys, graces, and mm-hmm. gifts of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And the sufferings are a means by which those things are received best.
Mm-hmm.
So when we suffer a little bit, we actually also are more grateful when we do experience gift. And then when we're in heaven, we will actually, I think it's St. Therese, but she said that like, there's levels of like glorification mm-hmm. in heaven. And mm-hmm. she said, if you really understood the suffering that was necessary to pass from one level of glory to another, you would suffer anything possibly in this world mm-hmm. in order to receive mm-hmm. a higher level of glory.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, it's
which
crazy.
Is funny because people have an entirely opposite understanding. They point to good people and say, why do good people suffer in this life? It seems to show that yeah. God is unjust. But you recognize if there's any basis for God having favorites, you recognize it through who suffers the most in this life.
Yep.
For example, God's own son is clearly his favorite out of all the human
race.
Yeah,
exactly.
And God's son suffered more than any other human being.
Yep.
So the more you suffer, the more indication you should have that you're one of God's favorites, and that means there's a higher potential for glory in the next life. Which means if you don't suffer much, you should probably be yourself. But
yeah.
I'm just kidding. But no, like suffering is almost a sign or a symptom of potential future glory. And so allowing yourself to feel what you're feeling when you are in those moments of suffering in this life is a way to be more ordered towards that grace that leads to that higher sanctification.
And, oh, man, I totally had a thought. But
I'm sorry.
No. I just kind of lost it, but it's probably for the best.
Is the buzz kicking in?
Maybe a little bit. Moderation.
Moderatio. Okay.
But,
so don't have one, I had one other.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. This is just a more practical thing, though.
Okay,
We've been going. This has been a really fun conversation.
This has actually been really great.
We've been going down all kinds of rabbit holes I didn't expect.
And I love it.
I love it, too. Yeah. This has been really good, but a more practical note, if you want something to motivate you towards moderation, again, I would go back to what I was saying earlier, that it actually is the way to enjoy life most.
Mm.
Immoderate pleasure does not lead to a happy life. It's funny
because people
often pit living a virtuous life against living an enjoyable life. But that's a false dichotomy.
That's so true.
It's really interesting. People say like, oh, do you want to like be a saint, you know, have a bunch of, I guess, good times in heaven? Or do you want to have fun here on earth? It's like, no, actually, a lot of the saints had a lot of fun on earth. They just did it in a good, healthy way that contributed to having the best time. For example, like sex addiction and the hookup culture.
Yeah.
Well, guess what you get along with that? Yeah, you might have some fun for sure.
Herpes.
Guess what you get? You get herpes. you get unexpected pregnancies. You get all kinds of like crisis situations. What do we have with alcoholism? Well, you know, it promises you some pleasure, but when you go to excess, you wind up with isolation. You wind
liver
up with
failure.
Regret. You wind up with liver failure. You wind up with DUIs. You wind up with mornings after where you just feel like crap. Okay, but then compare that with a more moderated experience of those same good things. With alcohol, you enjoy it a little bit like Christ did. Christ drank.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing. By the way, I have some friends who are Baptists who used to say Christ, whenever in the Bible it said Christ drank wine with his friends, it really meant grape juice, which I thought was hilarious.
Bro.
Because grape juice wasn't invented for like more than 1,000 years after Christ lived.
This is so funny.
Like probably almost 2,000 years after Christ lived. So like that's just ridiculous. But yeah, Christ drank, so there's a moderate way to drink. And when you drink moderately, what do you wind up with? You wind up with some enjoyable times. You wind up with good conversations and memories with friends. But you don't have to have DUIs. You don't have to have terrible hangovers. You get all the good without the bad. And then, you know, with sex or other pleasures, what do you get? You get an enjoyable, healthy, intimate relationships when it's done in the context that Christ intended it, with marriage.
And you actually...
But you don't wind up with all the regrets of hookup culture.
And when you actually take yourself away from it for a little while,
mm-hmm.
you enjoy it when you do have it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have it all the time...
No, you get burnt out.
Exactly.
You can actually burn out your dopamine receptors when you enjoy pleasure too excessively. And then you can't enjoy anything after that.
But if you filter it properly, it's like, whoa, this is great.
Yeah.
And when you don't have it, it's like, okay, yeah, like, I'm okay. And then when you have it again, it's like, oh, wow, like, this is awesome, you know?
It's almost like the same God who values moderation also created those pleasures. It's like the same God who intended for us to live moderately also gave us the pleasures that we should enjoy moderately. He's like, he intended for us to enjoy these pleasures, but he intended this for us to do it in the right way.
Yeah.
And so that's why he's like, look, if you want to enjoy these in the best way possible, just do them moderately.
Yeah.
And if you go to an excess, you're going to learn in very natural consequences that that's too much. Yeah, sorry, that was just a practical thing that
I
thought of.
No, I appreciate
like sometimes,
that, yeah.
Sometimes there is that false dichotomy, like, there's the holier-than-thou people who are, like, trying to be saintly and pious, and then there's the people who have really fun in life. It's like, do people really have fun?
Well, I think I'm going to probably butcher this quote, and I'm going to more paraphrase it, but that I want to say it's, like, Carlo Acutis maybe who said this, but don't quote me on that at all. But basically that if you live like the world, you look like a repeat. If you want to be unique, be a saint.
Mm-hmm.
Basically that.
But uniquely happy.
Yeah. But that like the people almost seems like, oh, you know, to live in God or to live with God, to live moderately or to the church is just a bunch of lists of things you
it's
can't do.
It's all about
do.
Conformity.
It's no.
Yeah.
Like you all look exactly the same. It's like, no, there's more diversity in the sainthood than there is in people who live worldly.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know what everyone in the world lives? You can just list how they all look like. And you'll find them.
Yeah.
Which if you want to know what a saint looked like, you can't. The only thing you can definitively say is they love Christ and they prayed.
Exactly.
Otherwise, everything else about them looks different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're like, that's. And they loved moderation.
Exactly.
And there were some saints who lived way more ascetically
than
some who did.
Some who didn't.
But that was their specific calling.
Mm-hmm.
And God doesn't call everyone to the same level of moderation.
Mm-hmm.
I think is also a really important thing for us to
that's
remember.
True.
That, like, as a monk, I'm called to a little bit more moderation than.
Except on Thanksgiving. Or when is it that you guys, like, bring in all the booze? And
okay.
I'm just kidding.
But we don't do that often.
No, I'm just kidding.
We have a bar,
yes.
3 times a year.
Okay, fair enough.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Super Bowl Sunday.
I shouldn't have brought that up.
Anyways, so yeah. Ignore that. But you know what I mean.
In general, you're supposed to live very moderately.
Yeah. Versus you, right? You're not. You live, like, nuts and crazy. You flew out to California. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
But you know what I mean.
I did try a matcha cocktail, which was really good. Shout out to
I
my
had
friend who
a
mixed that.
Apple cider caramel mule.
Whoa!
At this Italian restaurant that I went to.
That's cool.
On Sunday, dude, it was fire.
Sounds fire.
It was
Where
so
was that?
Tasty. Rizzo's.
Rizzo's really good.
Yeah,
it's this Italian restaurant.
Yeah, they had
super
this
good
big
meatballs.
This big Our Lady of Mount Carmel feast. Nate came to this year. It's a party.
It's fire.
Like this entire town turns out for this.
Such
thing.
Good food.
So
yeah.
But anyways,
yeah.
So. Well, thank you for joining us for a very enjoyable and really fun.
Yes. This was some good Chardonnay.
It actually was pretty tasty.
I'm not going to lie. That was pretty good stuff. Considering it was bottled in 2020, which is
not pretty recently,
trauma year for all of us.
Oof. Yeah, I bet there's not many 2020 bottles left. You know what I mean?
Exactly. No, I yeah, honestly, that's a good point.
Actually, I wonder if that'll be a year that like sells like crazy. It's like if there's actually any 2020 bottles left, like 20 years from
now.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
It'll be like a big thing. Like, oh, it's a trauma wine.
Exactly.
anyways, thank you for joining. I actually, just as a final note, someone who listens to the podcast recently said it took them a long time to realize that we're brothers, like blood brothers.
Are you serious?
Yeah. The whole I build in the brotherhood thing, this didn't.
It's not just because he's a monk.
Yeah, exactly.
We're genuinely brothers.
So he's my younger brother, and I'm his older brother. I'm the monk. He's not.
I'm not a monk.
And as he likes to remind me, I'm the celibate. So
I'm not. What's up? How you doing? I'm just kidding.
You can't slide into his DMs. He's taken.
Of course.
Anyway, so thank you for joining us for another episode of All Good in the Brotherhood. If you liked anything we said, please like leave a comment below about what you enjoyed. If you have any questions about maybe some practicalities of moderation or how you can live it out or how you can even evangelize in moderation, like leave a comment.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like this video, share it with your friends. Mm-hmm. If you want to see some other podcast content, click up here. If you want to see some monk content, click right here.
One more thing. If you want to enter into the comments and just say something you need prayers for, please do that too. Especially if you're someone who has struggled with some of these immoderation behaviors. If you are working on sobriety, you're trying to get past alcoholism or whatever, go ahead and leave the number of days you've been sober. I don't know if that's too personal, but like if you're willing,
let us rejoice just in do freedom. That
because yeah. like freedom is such a good thing. Community. We want to support. We want to have a community here in yeah. the comment section. We want to have some positive energy. Absolutely. We want to be praying for each other. So yeah. feel free if you need to leave prayer intentions. Do that in the comments because
we will pray for you.
We will pray for you, and the other people who are in the comments might pray for you too. So awesome. Absolutely, yeah.
So
thank you for your time.
Yeah, have a wonderful day.
You guys drink moderately.
Adios.